Welcome to Accounting High.
You just have to be bold and you have to ask. If there's something you want to do, don't let preconceived notions hold you back. What's the worst they could do is say no. So they say no. Who cares? Nothing gained, nothing lost.
Well, a lot of us are afraid of rejection.
May I have your attention, please? I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
Welcome to Accounting High. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here we're on a mission to set our own traditions. Here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Jody.
We're going to have a problem here.
Welcome, students. Class is in session, and I have with me none other than the radical CPA. We got Jody Paydar on the show with us today. Thank you for joining me, Jody.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. You've been a staple in our conversations over the past few years, so having you on is a treat. I think the first time somebody mentioned your name, it was Ackerman's dad, and he said, well, isn't Scott the Jody Paydar of accounting? I think he mispronounced your name just like his son does. He mispronounces everybody's name. My other son of a CPA, the early version of the show, and he linked me and compared me to you. So I was like, well, I got to take notice of this. Who's this Jody Paydar? And I looked it up and I saw everything you were doing. And it's like, damn, I am the new Jody Paydar. Is that what? And I was saying Paydar is a joke, but Jody Paydar, however you want to say it, right? Do you correct people if they pronounce it wrong?
I don't, but it's easy because it's Paydar like radar.
There you go. Yeah. I know other people in our profession have problems with names. Nayo always gets Nayo. Almost half of the people that I know still call her Nayo, and it's wrong, but I try to correct people for her sake. For me, it's Scarano, but people call me Scarano all the time. I try not to correct them, but sometimes I do because it's like the Sopranos. Jody Paydar, today you're at the Accounting High Guide. This is like the guidance counselor's office. This is like the where we talk about the vision, the mission, we talk about the profession, we talk about the future, we could talk about the past, but we talk about here the radical CPA because that's what you are and that's been your brand. Let's just start with, how did you get started in accounting? How was high school for you, Jody?
So I actually took accounting in high school and I'm such a geek that we won like the major award of accounting. So like we actually competed at the community college and we took state. And then we actually got to so I was in Chicago or Illinois at the time. And then we actually got to travel to accounting competitions at Madison at the University or Whitewater, I think it was. And we took the championship there, which is pretty cool. So like as a student, you just take a test and then like the accounting team like turns in their tests and then we won. And the other cool thing about it is another one of the women who was on the team with me, she's a tax attorney and we used to do a lot of estate planning together. Like our little high school accounting team has gone on to do great things.
And I always compare high school. This is why it's Accounting High. I think high school is the blueprint to a lot of our future in our lives. How we are in high school is how we are now in so many ways in social settings. And I had a great conversation with Jason Blummer, and he attributed you to his early stages of Twitter. A lot of people talk about you when they talk about getting on Twitter, that you were the first person they mentioned getting on Twitter. So you were not only involved in accounting early on, but I'm sure you've always had an eye for tech, and we'll get there. But one thing that Jason kind of described was this peer group of like-minded professionals that all found each other through different events or conferences, and you guys all met at one of these early events. Tell me your, like, I don't want to jump ahead on the story, but when you mentioned high school and you mentioned your friend, I thought about this peer group is very similar to a peer group that I've found in the accounting space And I always compare it to high school. So tell me a little bit about that.
So the funny thing about it was, is I was starting to use these new tools and I had left a mid-sized firm. So fast forward my career, right? But I was part of a mid-sized firm at the time and I left it and I joined my dad and it was my dad's firm, but that's a whole nother story. But when we started to use these new cloud tools, basically what happened is I realized the way I was going to work with my customers were different. And I was looking for support. I was looking for help. And it really hasn't changed all that much. But if you go to State CPA Society, what they're talking about is usually behind the times, unless you're talking about Maryland Society, right? Like Maryland Society of CPAs is its own thing. But aside from that, like there was nowhere to go. And Twitter had just started at the time. And a woman that I had met goes, you should go on Twitter. Like it, you know, you can learn lots of things, whatever. And so I went on and I just started searching and I found this accounting community. And we basically were coined a movement back in like 2009, maybe 2010 by Mark Koziel and Tom Hood at the time. And basically it was me and Jason Blummer and Shayna Chapman and Michael Sue and Chris Farmand. And we were the early adopters of Twitter, of the cloud, of these new ways of pricing and practice management. And we basically were talking back and forth on Twitter. And then there was this Accounting Today conference. And we were like, well, why don't we all meet up in Vegas at the Accounting Today conference? And we did. So we had our own like social meetup. And if you think about it back then, that was very weird to go meet people that you met online. That was very like not.
Very weird. Yeah. You didn't know what you were getting.
Right.
Like back then it was like chat rooms. Oh, you don't know this person.
Right. Yeah. And we said, well, let's do something to learn about customer experience. And Zappos was in Vegas as well. So we went to the Zappos tour together. So basically we created a Zappos meetup the day before this accounting conference where we all got to hang out together. And then we met up at the conference. And this is like so traditional. And I was young at the time, not that I'm old now, but I was in my early 30s. And again, this is a while ago, right? And the funny thing was, is we had our own session together, Jason and I. We said, you got your dad's firm, now what? And we talked and like Mark Koziel and Tom Hood were in the room and they were just kind of blown away by the stuff we were doing. And then they found out we had all met up and they coined us a movement. And this is so like traditional. Like the next morning, Mark was on stage and he called out like to talk to the audience about this group of young professionals who were doing things differently and changing everything. And none of us were in the room because we had been out. And is that not like,
all night.
Yeah, basically
that's what's happening now, basically.
So it was just, it was so high school, right? Like you're like the teachers, right? The establishment is talking about us and they're like giving us a shout out. And we're like not even in the room because we had been like hanging out together all night. And it was just so high school, right? So anyways, that was like the beginning of kind of this community that has now evolved significantly, right? I'll say it was even the early tax Twitter. We were hashtag, I think, Geeks Unite or something like that. But that was the early
idea. Phases of tax Twitter. Every time I talk to people about tax Twitter, those early stages, nobody has a founder. But Jody was loud. You were loud and everybody remembers Jody. Like that was early days. And I think that also goes to like having a personal brand and creating something like that, because back then, that wasn't a word. You didn't really talk about personal brand. And you got Jason Blummer walking around with braided belts and doing things differently, like not wearing a suit. Right. And we got you calling yourself Radical CPA with Martian, like a CPA alien. Before I wrote the rap CPA aliens, you were walking around being different and being yourself and being different. And that's the stuff we talk about on the show all the time. These are people that have come out and been outspoken about, look, I don't know that much. Like this is me talking too. I don't really know that much. I'm trying to run a firm. I'm trying to do things, but I want to learn more. I want to talk to people and I'm going to come out there and be okay with not knowing everything. Cause it used to be, you know, in order to get on stage, in order to talk, you had to be an expert. It was the experts talking and everybody else had to listen because the experts knew what they were doing. But at a certain point, there were people out there challenging the experts. Like you said, you know, the ones talking in the classroom, they're the teachers, right? They're supposed to be the teachers, but they're teaching old methods at all these state societies. So
well, the thing about it was too, is that was when Twitter just came, that was the democracy of it, right? Like that was the whole idea. And I kept saying like, look, if Egypt can get overthrown by Twitter, remember, I don't know if you remember back then, but like the governments were being overthrown by Twitter at that time. I was like, well, why can't we overthrow the AICPA? Now, I mean, I did some crazy stuff and I got, I'll say, reprimanded by the AICPA early on.
Shake your hand at the man, right?
I've also learned that a lot of change has to come from within. And how do you kind of temper that voice a little bit so that you can push change from the inside as well? So that's some of my learnings as I kind of grew up through my disruption, right? A lot of times I came in with a strong fist and like, this has got to change. And then I kind of realized that as things evolved, that if I toned myself down a little bit, I could still be radical and I would have more people hear me. So that was kind of my evolution, but I'm always leading the charge. I'm like talking AI, talking into the next gen. Like the stuff that I talk about is blows people's mind because it's like they can't even get there. So that's just my, I'll say, growing up on social too. Like sure. Kind of learning how to play a little bit nicer.
Well, it's kind of like a repeat of, in a way, it's a repeat of high school. You get the different social dynamics and everybody's kind of like finding their place again too, because now you're met with people that are all over the country, yet all together and all connected through a common profession too. Like, so you're connected, not just through geography at this point, you're connected through your, it's almost like your blood too, because in a way you and Jason were both offspring of CPAs. So it was like a generational shift that you were seeing, technological shift. And early on you had one of these like future seeing moments or moments of clarity to where you saw how it should be. But most people are not there. Most people still just need and want to just get their stuff done.
So I wouldn't say that I saw the future. I saw that what I was doing in the present wasn't working and I needed to iterate on it and I needed to change it. So as I it's easy to look back and say, oh, I saw the future. But realistically, what I was doing is I just knew what we were doing wasn't working. And as we use these new tools in our firm, I had to change something. And so I started changing things. And the more you change things, the more other things are forced to change. And I iterated through it and say, now when you look back, you could say, oh, she saw the future. But in reality, it was me getting to work every day and saying, this isn't working. How do I fix it? This isn't working. How do I fix it? And keep doing it. And now, because of that historical, people say, oh, I was a pioneer. Because of that historical look back, now what I see is a lot of the things that we iterated through are happening again as the technologies are changing, right? So as I'm looking at AI and stuff, it's very much like the world was when it was like I was trying to figure out the cloud. You know, you kind of take that experience and you apply it to the next thing. Then it becomes clearer, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always the next fad or the next thing, but the big things that changed the entire face of the way we look at stuff was first the cloud. And, you know, if we're going to go there and talk about the history of that, how it exploded, all of these apps blew up and there was a height to that. But now we're already seeing the consolidation and we're basically seeing the cream is rising to the top and there's only going to be a handful of players in this market and somebody's going to have a solution for that. Same thing with AI and how it all works together. But practically speaking, you got a lot of firm owners that were not even having the problems you were having. So you may have seen problems that weren't perceived as problems to your dad or the generation before. What were some of the things that you were most frustrated about that you had to change when you took the firm over for your dad?
Well, the big thing was is pricing, right? And cash flow. And the whole idea of it was is now when you were using these new technologies, like how do you build 2 minutes? That's always been my thing. You can't build 2 minutes. And so you have to fundamentally change what it is you're delivering on, what it is you're selling, and how you're serving
it up.
Oh, you
just do 15-minute increments, right? Isn't that what you do? You just round up?
Right. Right. Yeah. So that was like that. And again, that's why everyone says, oh, it's technology. No, it's not technology. I really believe it's practice management at its core, because once you realize that the technology shifts everything else in your firm, then you start to learn how to standardize things. You learn how to productize things. You learn how to price things. And then you really become a technology company that's just so pretty much selling accounting services, right? Like that's ultimately what the Radical CPA kind of evolved to. And again,
you're
I think
a managed
it's more
service provider almost.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think that's the piece that it kind of evolved itself, right? Like, and I think the thing about me is that actually made it happen was I couldn't sit still and like go backwards. Once you start implementing these new tools, it was like, how do I figure it out to get to the next step? And I think that's the entrepreneur in me. And I think that's the entrepreneur in next generation firm owners, right? It's like, okay, now you have to figure it out. What does figuring it out look like versus, oh, I'm just going to take whatever they did and not change it up and just kind of go back on rinse and repeat. So I think that's the entrepreneur in me who had to figure it out.
Well, it started with questioning the current methods, and somebody had to question it because pricing didn't seem to make sense to you. And you got Ron out there talking about value pricing and doing that differently. So you got people that are thinking really big, and then you have people practically that are out there doing it. And Ron mentions you a lot on our episode. These early stages of his ideas, somebody had to go out there and actually test them and test the waters here. So was that what you were kind of doing with the pricing? You were like, well, maybe we should explore different methods of pricing.
Yeah, we just never called it that, right? It was just like, I'm going to price differently, right? And I always say, like, if you have a real problem, you actually have to do it. Like, I didn't have any cash flow. I joined my dad in June, and I had to get money. Like, I wasn't going to wait till after tax season. So I started like subscription-based services and pricing, and I needed money up front. So I was like, look, I'll do your tax return, and I'll do all your bookkeeping, and I'll just divide it by 12, and you'll pay me monthly.
And well, wait, you say you didn't have money. Aren't you supposed to just go out and get new clients? Is it like you start at a firm, you become a partner, you got to go find your clients and bring your clients on, right?
I had to go get new clients, right? That was my dad's thing. I thought I was going to do technical work. And the first thing he said to me is go find your own clients. And my clients looked like me, acted like me, and talked like me. And they were in their early 30s as well. And it was just like, oh, okay. They didn't know any different. They're like, okay, we'll pay monthly for it. It seemed to work. And
of course, once you present somebody with that reality, it's changing your mindset around it too. But you didn't have any preconceived notions. You just saw what was being done and you wanted to do it a better way. How about the clients? Right. How were you attracting clients then? Because this was around the time when I took over the firm I'm at, and I was going door to door. That's what was being sold to me. Like Padgett was telling me, you got to go door to door. This is how you obtain new clients. You knock on doors, you pit the pavement, and eventually people say yes.
No, I was always like online, and I'm a pretty social person. So it just seemed natural for me to like start talking to people on Twitter. It started natural for me to get on it, Facebook. Like I'm still on Facebook, but like it was just social, but I call it social business, not social media. It's really just a communication tool, right? And here's the thing. I was a young mother at the time, and women have to innovate. I usually don't talk about this because I think, you know, being where I am now as a woman, you're given limitations because you have certain things in your life that are happening that you have control over. But ultimately, like, there's other outsized forces. And if you think about, again, years ago, what it was like, and unfortunately, it's not that much better today. But I was a young mother. My kids were little. My son was 4, and I had to do things differently. I had to work and I had to get stuff done while they were at school. And I only had a limited time to do work. I didn't have the opportunity to like work from, I'd say, 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. That wasn't an option for me. So I had to figure out how to work smarter. So when you're given those limitations and those constructs, you get a lot more innovative faster. And that was really, I think, what kind of motivated me. Plus, when I left my old school firm, I felt that they were limiting me because like I was a part-time tax person and they weren't giving me the opportunities to become, I'll say, full professional. They saw me as a part-time worker as opposed to a professional who worked part-time, right? And what they did, and what that did is that kind of gave me that chip on my shoulder to be like, I'm going to show you, right? Like I'm going to, and that's the fuel like of your life experience that makes you like go out and do it. When you have those constraints, when you need money, all of a sudden innovation becomes a lot easier. Plus, if you don't have this legacy thing holding you back, the risks you're taking aren't as material. Because like if I change something or I do something, I'm only doing it to new clients who are coming in. It's not like I was, again, my dad had a practice, but it wasn't huge, right? It wasn't really doing. So if I was making changes, it wasn't like I had a risk losing all this business or, you know, it was to new clients. So I think that was kind of the perfect storm, plus the cloud and social and the external factors that really allowed me to be the innovator that I was. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So what was your dad's reaction to this early on as you start doing things vastly differently?
So he didn't understand it.
Parents just don't understand.
He wasn't necessarily against it because he saw that it was working. Like, he saw the money coming in. So he wasn't like really against it, but I'll say he didn't really embrace it. It wasn't until a few years later that he really started to see the opportunity and that stuff that it was.
Oh, yeah.
When you're working with your dad, there's something to be said about it because he wants you to be successful. Whereas, again, a lot of these, if you go into
you
a
want
partner,
him to be proud of you.
Right, right. But I think he gave me a little bit more rope, either to hang myself or not, than I'll say a traditional next generation partner would.
Ooh, but that's the best way for anybody to learn. I try to talk about that as for us as firm owners, like if we could let go and let people make mistakes and let people do wrong, if they want to do right, they will. And they'll learn from those mistakes. It's, you know, your dad knew, he knew you because he raised you and he knew you were going to eventually find your way, you know, and he didn't intercede. Like he didn't. So what happened, right. I think what happens with everybody when they experience early success with change is the naysayers are still apprehensive and they're still questioning, well, really, is this going to last or is this just a fluke? And they continue to question it and you continue to feel like you have to prove something to somebody. So then you're going to work extra hard to prove that you're doing it right. And to prove to everybody that you think is, I mean, in some ways you feel like everybody's against you because everybody's saying this is not going to work. I don't get it. What are you doing? But then once you start getting validation, how does that feel? Like, and when did that happen for you?
Well, so it wasn't just validation from like clients and monetary success. It was the validation from social media that fueled me, right? Like all these other peers, colleagues. And then too, like, even
but aren't they
people
your competition?
That I looked up to. No. Like there's
weren't
so much
these people
work out
your competition
there.
Competition for clients, right?
No.
But that back then, you didn't think that?
No, not at all.
See, that's a mindset though. That's how some people still think today.
You know, make the pot grow for everyone. That's the way I thought about it.
The rising tide.
Yeah. But the thing was, is then I got like all this social media validation because I was blogging for Accounting Today and people would tweet me back my articles and they're like, you're so right. And these were practice owners who had been in practice for 20 plus years and they were starting to listen and they were, and I was changing their life. And that's what actually kept me going. It wasn't the money. It was the fact that I was having a bigger impact. on these old school CPAs and they were starting to take notice of it and they were like changing their firms and it was changing their lives.
So that's
cool stuff.
But you're at a firm. Aren't you supposed to be impacting your clients?
So the funny thing was, but like my love always was about making a better life for CPAs. Once I realized that you didn't have to live in this awful 12-hour day, all I could talk about and shout from the rooftop was about like, look, if you change your firm, you can have a better life. You can make more money. You can work less hours. And that was really what the Radical CPA about and like my mission and my calling and my passion was about is basically changing the world. And people say that.
But changing people that, so you said this about your clients. Your clients looked and felt like you. They were around your age and they were doing things the way you were doing it. But accountants are you. And that's not even an age thing. That can be any generation. I think that there's a, like something in us when we're born an accountant for some of us and we fully embrace that or we fight against it. And eventually we end up in accounting anyway, at least for most of the people that I talk to, it's sort of inevitable. But what you're doing is you're helping people that think like you and you can have an impact because you knew where you were in that at that stage and you knew how this could speed up their process and speed up and you were seeing a direct impact. Did you see any dollar signs with this at first, or were you doing it just out of the sheer fulfillment of like the passion?
So it was initially out of passion after when like probably 3 years in, the vendors really got involved in it. And that's when there was a monetary opportunity that came along with it. And it grew my firm too, from a perspective of, I started doing consulting with vendors, which was very different. Like I really became a tech consultant as well. And so it grew my firm that way, but there wasn't such a thing as an influencer, right? Like that didn't really exist.
What
but I started
year
getting
was this when you, the 3 years in, or
it was probably 2012, 2013, where I started getting paid for doing things. And this is cool. Like I don't know if you know, like 10 years ago, I was on the Sage tour bus. Like I video blogged the RV with Sage leadership. And it was really funny because one of the old school thought leaders said, how on earth did you get to go on the Sage RV through the desert? We started in Vegas and we went through the desert and we ended up in Reno and we had a parking lot party for the next generation of accountants. And I video blogged.
So awesome. Yeah, it's so cool.
And I got paid. It wasn't much, but I got paid and I got to like video blog.
You get to travel. They're paying for all that stuff. That's enough.
Absolutely.
Sometimes.
And it was really funny because an old school thought leader said to me, how on earth did you get to go on the Sage RV? And I said, I asked.
You. No, oh, you asked.
I asked.
Dope.
And
hey, you know what? I got a story just like that. You know how I went to Italy this year?
You
know
you
how
asked,
I got to go to Italy? Yeah. I wrote a rap for them, but yeah, in a way that was my ask. You know, you could take charge and you could do these things if that's like within your reach too.
Right. And if that's important to you, and for me, it was the opportunity to video blog. And again, think about 2013, like that was not, people weren't video blogging at that time.
Nobody would second guess it. If I got invited on a bus now to rap or something, now it's like commonplace now. But 2013, people aren't even using tech at this point. This was first early stages of Xero. 2012 was when Xero first came out.
Right.
That's the cloud bubble.
Right. So anyways, the funny thing about it, again, like when the older generation asked me about it, they couldn't believe, because again, nobody knew what an influencer was, or nobody knew how authentic commentary about tools would actually help vendors sell tools, right?
Markets
like,
or conversations.
Like market, right? Yeah. All those things, right? So anyways, but the funny thing is you just have to be bold and you have to ask. If there's something you want to do, don't let like preconceived notions hold you back. What's the worst they could do is say no. Like,
yeah.
So they say no. Who cares? Nothing gained, nothing lost.
Well, no. A lot of us are afraid of rejection. Like it's hard to put yourself out there. It really is very hard for a lot of people. It's been very hard for me too, to do this. Like I don't like when people say no. If I ask something and they say no, I start feeling bad about, well, wait, was it me? Like, what did I do? Or what could I do differently? And it's a hard thing to put yourself out there. So that your mindset going into it was, I've got nothing to lose. You've got an abundance mindset. Did you always have that? Did you always think we're better with more and everybody's better together? Or did something change at a certain point?
No, I've always had that mindset. I've always been a giver. In fact, probably to my detriment sometimes, right? Like I give more, but long term, I think that that's what's actually made me as successful as I've been, is that I gave away so much in the early days that now that I'm at a different stage, it comes back. So
yeah. And but you don't know that. So I hear Jason Statz talks about that a lot. He just puts everything out there and it's starting to come back now. You know, he got invited to Zero's thing and he's doing all kinds of things now, but it was a slow race to get there. He didn't put stuff behind a paywall. That's what some people do with their content, is they immediately put it behind a paywall. And I'm struggling with this. I don't think I want to put anything behind a paywall. I want to just give it away. But, you know, I'm like putting a lot of effort into these music videos and things like that. And I honestly, because I'm putting so much work into it, so much time into it, in a way, I feel like, well, maybe I should be getting paid for these. And, but also I'm doing it because I love it and I'm enjoying it. So when you were doing that stuff, did you ever have that thought of like, maybe I should be getting paid because it's really good, or what?
Well, the struggle came when my firm was growing at the same time as this was growing. And my dad was like, you need to focus on your firm. And I was like, yeah, but this is what I like to do, right?
Right. I like to do it, but can this be work? That's also a question too.
Right. And so that was kind of a turning point, right? And then that's when I basically figured out how to get myself out of my firm. And I brought in, my first hire became a partner of mine, and she really started running my firm. And it allowed me to do those other things. So what happened was, is it became a turning point where it's, okay, what do I really want to do? What do I love doing versus what do I not love? And you know, if you love what you do every day, it's not work. And if you love what you do every day, you're going to be more successful than if you try and sit there and do stuff that you don't love. Now, I can do a tax return, multi-state tax return, like the best of them, right? Like that's my roots. That's what I was like raised in, but it's not what I want to do every day. It's just not me anymore. It wasn't
that
a certain
was always
point,
a means to an end, but it's that not was me. The operational, like that was, and that's what some, a lot of firms are still selling is the tax return. But what's shifting now and what is being talked about more and more is having an impact and working with your clients and being an advisor, being a coach, a consultant, whatever you want to call it, having impact on clients. You were seeing this, but your clients were the accountants. Did you see this also with your clients in particular? Because you're still not, you're not at the firm anymore. You know, you're away from your firm. Now you are working with accountants, so to speak, in so many ways. Did you see them as two different things, like having an impact on my clients and working directly with them and growing this, or fueling this passion that I have for teaching?
So for me, I'd say I have the heart of a teacher and I fueled the passion, right? But I let my partner learn how to become an advisor and I taught her how to become an advisor. And the good thing about my dad was my dad's always been an advisor. And so that's where we utilized him within the firm to really like help take his legacy knowledge to pass that advisory conversations and grow the team to do that. It's about kind of using the skills that are in your firm the right way, right? It didn't make sense for my dad to be doing tax returns. It was
but also
much better
streamlining
for him.
That process and making right. it a more profitable, better process for them. So you're seeing a way to change the world in accounting, the accounting world.
Right. And when you productize your service offering and you're that specific about it, it becomes very easy to have those advisory conversations, right? Yeah. So I was kind of incubating both at the same time, but if like I would say my passion was more on the other side. And then once I was able to really step away and let my partner run the firm, then it was easy. But it took a couple of years. It didn't happen overnight.
Like, so these, there's, you know, there, I don't know, they say there's like one in every 10 accountants, or maybe it's even one in every 100 accountants, are like you and like me, or like people that want, we have this part of our brain where we want to sell, help people, we want to sell, we want to talk to people. Like there's a sales aspect to accounting, and then there's the process, there's the analytical component of it. And it's rare that somebody has both, where they can see this as a business and run it as sales and then elevate from being the technician to then running this as an entrepreneur. And having that in your blood, the accountant plus the entrepreneur, you can speak the language of business, but you can also like change and impact people's lives because you also can see the business aspect of it and see forward for them too. So that's where a lot of accountants, they grow into becoming CFOs or forecasters or looking at the future and doing the forecasting and becoming the advisor and helping, but there's not many. There's not. So what would you say are some of the characteristics or traits to look for in somebody? If maybe you have a kid that's like that, because I find that most successful transitions are children buying it from their parents, but there's others out there too. How do you find that in an employee? What do you look for?
So I think it's the art of conversation. And that was always what docked me at my old firms. So because I would talk to clients more than I was supposed to. And, you know, like, it's funny because in the old school way, that was like bad for timesheets. And I will never forget, I used to sit outside my old managing partner's office. And he told me one day when he was, I don't want to say talking to me about my timesheet, right? Like, he wasn't yelling at me, but he was discussing my timesheet with me. And I made some comment about it. And he said to me, he said, Jody, he goes, I can't teach what you talk to people with on the phone. He's like, and he said that to me. He's like,
you can't teach that.
He says, you have a certain rapport that I don't know how to teach to other accountants. And he said, you can struggle with the work, but he's like, I can help you with that part. He's like, I can't help you with the conversation. And that was the managing partner who said that. And that was one of those things that never, it always stuck with me because sometimes I would struggle. I mean, I passed it. It took me 5 times to pass the CPA exam. It did not come easy for me. I think you have to find the right people and then you can teach them the technical. I think we spend too much time focused on the technical instead of on the person. And I think it's backwards from an interviewing process.
But you have two types. You have some people and you want the large majority of people that don't have that to still be engaged and to still want to, like when I'm talking about this as an owner, as a manager, and your employees, you want the worker bees. You want the people that are going to stay and sit behind that desk
right.
and crank everything out. And those are the people that are foundational, at least for us to run our firms.
You need technical people.
And those people can be outsourced now. Those people right. are easy to find, and AIs might be outsourcing them to a degree too, you know, with these conversations of what AI is going to be able to do when it comes to the accounting work. That's a whole nother conversation. But right now we're looking at that labor is a lot less, but it's those far and few, the people that have the art of conversation, they don't have to be an accountant, do they? Now, they could be somebody that can learn and adapt, but they don't necessarily have to even be a CPA.
No, and that was like what Anderson Consulting did years ago. Like everyone thinks this stuff is new. Anderson Consulting years ago went to universities and hired liberal arts majors and taught them consulting. They didn't go hire accountants and teach them consulting. They hired liberal arts majors and they taught them the financials and they taught them all the consulting stuff. So why can't you hire a music major? Why can't you hire a history major and teach them the accounting piece?
The successful firms are doing that and they don't have a labor problem right now. The ones who have a labor problem and the ones who have issues are the ones that are trying to hire CPAs because we're at a 17-year low in CPAs right now or whatever.
Right.
There aren't enough of them. But as an accountant, I'm questioning. I'm not a CPA, so I'm allowed to do this, right? I could talk about taking down the AICPA because I didn't take the exam 5 times. Right. I didn't take it any times. But that's not something. I'm not saying that from a point of differentiation or like just for differentiation. Right. Just to say, like, for as an EA, I could hire somebody. They could get their EA. And we do taxes. They can do more than a CPA can do. Not more than a CPA can do. They can do everything you need a CPA to do because we're not doing
audits. Absolutely.
So then it begs the question, will the AICPA eventually get taken down or fall to its own demise in your lifetime? Or do you help them keep the relevancy of the license?
Well, I've always been of the trying to help them mentality just because I spent so long trying to get my CPA that it's really important to me.
Well, in the beginning, you were shaking your fist and you were talking about the takedown, but quickly you turned into let's help it from within.
Yeah. And I love the profession as a whole. And I love so many of the CPAs there that I think that it's worth it to like evolve the brand and help the brand stay relevant. I don't know. That was like Jason's Blummer thing like years ago, right? He was like, and I don't know. I don't know if it'll still be relevant, yeah. But I don't want anything to happen to it, right? And I'll still have your license. I do still have my license.
And it's part of your personal brand because you can't be the radical CPA and not be a CPA.
Right, right.
Just like Drew Carrick is the rapping CPA and he can't be the rapping CPA. You know how I heard of him was through you. He was on your little thing on LinkedIn one day.
So the other thing about the AICPA is, and this is again, me like being in the profession for years, is the AICPA is made up of lots of people. And those are all my friends now, right? Because like I've worked with them to accomplish things, to innovate as they could as a big org, right? Like it's a very different level of innovation, but I've helped them to really innovate. And like they want what's best. It's just, it's a hard place to be when you have such a diverse audience of CPAs. Just think you have the industry CPAs, you have the public accountant CPAs, you have the small firm CPAs, you have the big firms CPAs. Now you have international CPAs and they have to come up with things that serve everyone. And sometimes when you try and serve everyone, you serve no one, right?
Yes. And you keep coming up with new designations and new,
right.
So all of those things I think are good in theory, and in theory it all works. But right now we're looking at the relevancy for public accountants to continue to grow their firms, to thrive. Do they look at hiring outside of that license, and then does it take away from the relevancy? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe they have enough stronghold on the licensure itself and the profession, and there's enough belief in those three letters that nothing ever happens to it, because that's a generational thing too.
Yeah. The other thing is when you think about who the AICPA serves, think about who's serving accounting and tax professionals, or like the people who are serving the customers who want accounting and tax services. Like you don't have to be a CPA to do accounting and tax work. Like for most of small business,
But it's very expensive to be a member of the AICPA and to be part of that. And I don't know if you can if you're not a CPA too. I know you said you don't have to be, but that's the biggest conference in our profession is Engage. And is it suggested that CPAs go there? Can people outside of CPAs go to that conference?
I think as long as you pay your $1,600 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's really expensive to keep your license. How much do you pay a year just to keep up with your license?
Oh, it's probably $1,000 all in, because you have to pay for your license and then you pay your state society dues and then you pay your AICPA dues, whatever. It's not crazy. Here's the thing about Engage. I was on the planning committee for Engage for like 6 years or whatever, for a long time. And I think what's cool about Engage is it brings a bunch of different groups together, and it kind of puts all the different arms of the AICPA practice management pieces together. Like you have tax, you have financial planning, you have A&A, you have them all under one roof. And it's that diversity of thought that makes that conference special, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But I think you can go if you're not a CPA. You just have to pay.
You just have to pay. Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you hop the fence like I did. I just hang out. I hang out outside the fence. I'm not going to say I hop the fence because vendors give me badges sometimes, but I'm just saying from my perspective, at the end of the day, it's part of the license and it's part of the profession. And we have to uphold that because we all went to school for this, and the technicians in all of us, especially the ones listening, that shows to the client what we can do, what we're capable of. And that shows to the, I'm hiring CPAs at my firm. The only people that are client facing are CPAs. It's my management team that's EAs.
Right. It's a brand. I mean, ultimately, it's the brand of being a CPA. And if you've worked hard, you kind of want to protect it, because you know how hard it took you to pass that exam and to like keep up with your licensing and go to all your CPE and all that stuff. So,
yeah. And that's one thing that Terrell Turner talked about. We did an episode on the CPA versus the EA. And it is purely branding when it comes to that. Nobody knows what the EA is.
Right.
EA is a federal license. And it's very useful.
It's for the IRS. I mean, it's so you can practice before the IRS.
Exactly. Yeah. But we still get called executive assistant. People make fun of us. You know, it's still a joke amongst my CPA friends, right? So we hide it. A lot of EAs don't even put it out there. We don't pronounce.
You know what cracks me up is the people who have both. I always think, why get both? Like,
yeah. I don't understand that. I asked, so Jeremy Wells has both, and we talked about this on the CPA versus the EA, and he was one of my moderators for the debate, and he had both. And he talked about why he got both. And I think it was more of a pride thing. It was more like, I can do this. And it, I think that's what goes with getting your master's and getting all these licenses. I mean, the people that you see that have
alphabet
soup behind their name, in a way, they're very proud of that. And they want people to know they're able to do this. And, but it's also perspective of the buyer. Your brand is, I'm a CFP and a CPA, right? I'm going to plan your money and account for it, you know, and I think that that creates a unique combination. Now, the ones with alphabet soup, I don't know if I could speak on that, but I changed all of my acronyms. I put now ADHD, OCD, OKR, like I don't even put the EA anymore, but that's also, again, part of your personal brand. Once you
it's part of your brand,
CPA,
right?
You're not practicing, but because you're the radical CPA, you're in it. You're in the trenches with everybody. You're dealing with your CPE all year, every year too. What is the future right now then for accounting, or like, you know, was it the perceived future from before? Like, how did your past future change?
So I think what happened is now, like, I kind of sit in the startup space, in the high tech space, right? So my role at April is Vice President of Tax Strategy and Evangelism. And
Evangelism, that's a new word. Too. I thought that was just for churches.
Right? I'm going to get you to be a believer. But
believe in April. And now April in and of itself is a great name, and it's tied to a deadline, right? That's the name comes from. This is April 15th. This is
So it's a 1040 application that essentially is competing with TurboTax, right?
Not
with accountants, because what we're doing is we're focusing on the returns accountants don't want.
The accountants that still think TurboTax is a competitor to them, those are the accountants it's competing with.
Yeah,
in their
That's
the mindset.
In their mind. Because I would say we're for all those 1040s that everybody's talking about firing, all those clients they don't want to do anymore because they can't service
them. People are selling off a lot of their 1040s.
Yeah, so all of those
badge offices are doing that now.
So all those 1040s, that's who we serve. That's the client base we serve. But what if this return was self-prepared, but you as an accountant had a view behind the scenes and you could either offer a walkthrough or you could just use all those data points to do something else with if you were a financial planner or something else. That's what we're doing. So,
and you're going to position it that way because TurboTax, I always thought we could do that with TurboTax. Somebody does a TurboTax return, we can go in, leave it self-prepared and just do a little review. But then it's like ethical, like, can we sign off on that as a preparer, all that other stuff. But it goes back to as a paid preparer because we're getting paid. That's a whole nother technical question. But TurboTax instead created their own brand that had the accountant alongside it. It's the TurboTax Live. Is April basically saying, we'll do that, but you're going to be that TurboTax Live person.
Basically. that's the idea. So the only thing is that's just one piece of it. Our other lines are actually selling into bigger fintechs, right? So if you think about the Chimes of the world, kind of the banking so they call them like neobanks, right? So they're banks that were born online, right? So let's say you have that banking app, you click on it and right up, it pops up and it says, hey, would you like your taxes done? And it's self-prepared, right? So our distribution model is really through fintech. It's not like accounting is kind of the side or the offshoot of it. And the reason I say that is because I've sold to the accounting market before and I know how long it takes, right? And in reality, tax is the last thing to be part of fintech. It's the last opportunity. If you think about like what Betterment has done with financial planning, Acorns, all of those other fintechs, the piece that they're missing is tax. And that's what our bigger picture engine is going to do. But we're starting with the idea of us, you know, self-prepared 1040, if that makes sense.
Question. You said you sold to accountants before. Does that play into the art of conversation? So are you selling to the accountants that don't have that art of conversation? And are you trying to have a conversation with somebody that really doesn't want to be sold to, doesn't want to have a conversation and wants to keep doing what they're doing? And that's the same accountant that also doesn't want to be selling on their own behalf to their firm or to their clients and to everybody else. They don't want to up their prices.
You know, I think part of it is that, but part of it is the accounting market's just slow to move. And when you think about venture capital and, you know, how fast you have to move product, you don't have the opportunity to wait 5 years for the accountant market to move, right? So that, like I said, this is more like when we talk about this accounting piece of it, this is more my like idea of what I want April to move through. But our core mission is really to help fintechs and banks and other providers provide self-prepared returns.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to sell to the person that doesn't want to be sold to, too.
Exactly.
And you can sell to somebody that you're solving their problem and they want that solution to their problem now. But that's dope. It's a great story that you got, Jody. You know, I think there was different bits along the way and nuggets of like aha moments, right? For you, have you had one recently? Are there things like you've had experienced a lot of change too? You sold your firm, you worked for BotKeeper, mm-hmm. and then moved straight from BotKeeper. You're still advisor ambassador, but at April, you started in accounting. Now you work for tech companies.
Right, right. So, and I was the first employee at April. It was like we had to build a product to start, right?
I kept getting them confused with Monday. I don't know why. One's a day of the week, one's a month, but they're both something. And I was like, yeah, Jody works on Monday now. Or is it January?
So I think that the biggest takeaway or my biggest vision that I see happening of the future, which I don't think most accountants are aware of or even vaguely understand, is the amount of money that's coming into this digital accounting and tax space. And it's not just small progressive firms. It's not private equity in the big firms. There are lots of tech companies that are putting money into selling accounting and tax online. And it's not just pilots. There's a couple stealth firms that I'm aware of that are going to be, you know, announced soon that are doing some pretty cool stuff. There's like LegalZoom and Racket Lawyer that are doing accounting and tax. There's Taxfile. There's all this other stuff that's happening in, I'll say, the digital way of delivering accounting and tax services that I think your old school legacy CPA firm owner has no clue of the shift that's going to happen and how fast it's going to happen, because the money that's coming into the space that's changing it, and private equity is pushing things as well. So when you see all of that, I think, gosh, how fast are we going to blink? And what the accounting and tax landscape looks is not what it looks like today, or for sure not what it looked like even 5 years ago.
It doesn't look like the way it did in 2013 when you were the tech consultant. It looks different now, very different. Right. So was it out of fear? Did you run away from the firm because you were afraid it was going to be extinct and you wanted to help keep it relevant?
No, you know what it was? I was ready for something bigger and better. I needed a new challenge. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. You kind of get bored. Like once something becomes
about
kind of the
years,
same.
Is it 4 years? Is that the cycle?
I think it's about three for me, two and a half to three.
For me, it's 4 years and 20 days. 4 years, 20 days.
I needed to go on to what was next. It was like, how could I take all that I had learned and just make a bigger impact on the world?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's dope. What's next after April then? Do you have anything on your sights? Is this, you're going on almost 2 years, so.
Right. Well, so I'm just getting started on the April side, and I'll tell you why, because I started building a product, which this was new experience for me. I've never actually been part of a build team before with engineers. And now all the times I say, well, why doesn't it just do this? Now I actually understand why it's not so easy to do it. So it's been an incredible learning experience for me to be on the build side and to build the team to help elevate it. And I've just moved over now to the sales and marketing side. And so like I have a new role. So I'm excited about the new role. So that'll keep me going.
That keeps you energized. Yeah. As the new roles and the stepping stones go, there's a certain chain of events, I think, that tends to happen to a lot of us. I don't know what you want to call it. Entrepreneurs is the word, right? Where we get bored and we want to iterate, do something new.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks, Jody. appreciate you coming on. I love the art of the conversation. That's going to work its way into the title of this. That's so dope. We'll talk again. We shall speak again soon.
Thanks for having me. It's been a joy.
Yeah. You got any parting wisdom for our, like, what's the quote that we can end this with?
Be radical.
Be radical. Dope. Thank you.
While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. Share this episode on social media, tagging us at Accounting High. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you.